July 30th, 2020. I believe it's July 30th or the 31st, but the 30th is close enough. It's Thursday. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, Denny McClain on No Filter Sports. And I don't know, guys, this is just... Let's start with the good news about the playoff-bound Tigers, okay? That's our local team. And as George Blaha, our good friend, likes to say, don't look now, but the season is one-tenth over. They are
4-2 over.
That's right. And all they got to do now at 4-2 is win 26 of their last 54 games, and they're in the playoffs because better than half the teams make the playoffs. So this is, of course, it's only a tenth of the season, even though it's less than 1 week. And yet they're looking pretty good. Any thoughts?
Well, I watched every game, and I'll tell you my thoughts after watching game one. I decided I couldn't take your buddy Shep anymore. And Jack and those guys. So we bring in Carson Fulmer, the guy they just picked up on waivers from the White Sox. And say, and they say, Matt says, this is an electric guy, electric fastball. Jack says, he's got a big arm. But command has been one of his issues. I watched this kid throw. He never got above 92 and 93. Maybe he had a big arm. Maybe that's why the White Sox just released him. So you got to look at this stuff. I was impressed with Wyandotte native and Gibraltar Carlson High School product, John Schreiber, the slash submariner sidearmer. I think he might help them. But guys, after that game, which the Tigers lost, as you know, I've been watching the Kansas City broadcast the last two nights on Major League Baseball extra innings. It's a big improvement.
Then you missed some amazing home run.
I bet I did.
But by the way, there's nobody in the ballpark, and I want to get into that a little bit later because I mean these are called spectator sports for a reason, because they're based on spectators, and I think this is getting really old really fast. But anyway, without 40,000 people there, Shep has got to cheer for 40,000 people. And here's how his Jacoby Jones's home run sounded last night in the Royals game.
Another 3-2. This one sprayed the other way. That one's deep. That ball's gone. Jacoby Jones pushes the Tigers in front. It's now 5-4 as he wears a crown again on a Wednesday night to lead the Tigers hitting attack.
You know, all of a sudden, Jacoby Jones is the next Mickey Mantle in the world of baseball.
I mean, great.
Enough is enough. You know, listen, this is a baseball team that can't find themselves yet. In about another 15 or 20 games, they'll give you a better idea of what they're doing. If Jacoby Jones is the biggest story on this baseball team, let's not get excited about going to the World Series unless we're able to buy our own tickets.
I'll tell you, Jacoby, I love the way.
What's that?
The season's a tenth over, almost there. We're in the home stretch.
Man, I know. All we got is 90% to go.
But oh, you know what? You gave up on him the other day, and I almost jumped.
I still have. When the pitchers get settled down and start to get their control, right now everybody's got a good fastball. But once they settle down and they start picking up their slider and their curveball in an appropriate way, you know, there's some of the guys who are senior players out there that are going out there and just going through some exercises. Yeah, they want to win, but they're still going through some exercises just to see how it feels with a couple of curveballs, a couple of sliders, and starting to set up hitters. Just give it another couple of weeks, and we'll see what we're doing. And Jacoby Jones, I hope he hits 50 home runs. I really do. But I think based on what I saw last year, he's got a long way to go.
Okay, let me tell you what Rex Hudler said on the Kansas City broadcast on Wednesday night about Jacoby.
He said, play-by-play guy?
He was a color guy, former Major League Baseball player. So Rex said, and he's very good. These guys are actually very good in Kansas City. Ryan Lefebvre is the play-by-play guy. He said, you know, this is a different Jacoby Jones than we've seen over the last couple of years. He said, in the past, last year, it looked like he was just too aggressive. He was too anxious. He was swinging at everything. He looks like a different player this year. He's calmed down. He's relaxed. He's taken pitches. And Denny, don't forget, we're already talking about one of the outstanding defensive center fielders in the entire American League and a great athlete. I like Jacoby, and I think good things are coming from him.
Well, I don't want a 235. I don't want a 230 hitter in Double A baseball to be my leadoff guy.
What is he hitting, Brandon? 350 or something?
421.
Last year he hit what? 235, 240, something like that. That's not the guy you want to lead off your ball club every night. 230, yeah, 235 last
He's batting ninth. Yeah, he's batting ninth. But
I don't care where he. I don't. You know, lead off here, lead off there. Doesn't make any.
The guy they Jenny, the guy they have leading off the ball.
If he doesn't lead off, he's going to come up in the inning with the bases loaded and two outs, and what happens? Boom, 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 boom. You know. And okay, I hope he does well. The kid has got all kinds of athleticism, and if the athleticism is any indication that he can do the job, then let's let him play for a while. Let him get his feet wet, especially in center field, because if he can fly as much as he indicates he can, he's going to help a lot of other outfielders out there, and they're going to not have to worry about catching the deep one against the wall.
Well, I was trying to say, I don't like the guy they have leading off right now. How come Nico Goodrum was the leadoff hitter to begin with, and he's still the leadoff hitter? I mean, I like him. I think he's a pretty good and pretty valuable all-around player. But
wouldn't that be called testing the waters?
It's been, as Eli says, one-tenth of the season is gone right now, and he's still the leadoff hitter.
Maybe I'm missing something. Are you guys calling a tenth of the season like it's silver with already?
it's just stunning that it's a tenth of the season already. This is going to be a game of attrition already. The Marlins are out for a week. The Phillies are out for a week. There's some teams might not even make it to 60 games. This is like a 60-yard dash with a guy that pulls a hamstring in the first 10 yards. That's the limp to the finish line. This is what it's going to be looking like.
That's a good analogy.
But you know, just for a second, Jacoby, I think you're both right, frankly. He's going to be better. He's older. He's still a kid. They are feeding him fastballs now. He's hitting fastballs over the fence. I do believe one of his home runs was a slider. So it's somewhere in between. He's not going to hit 421. He may hit 270, 280, and with decent power, maybe move up in the lineup a little bit. But here's the other one that got me. By the way, on every batter now, they're showing the shift because there's a shift on everybody. It's gone from the Lou Boudreau shift on Ted Williams, one guy in an entire league. But the Cabrera shift is absolutely, I'm looking at this laughing. I cannot believe it. They have everybody but the pitcher.
Seven guys.
Yeah, well.
The outfield.
Well, the first baseman was.
Is he going to bunt?
The first baseman was on the dirt almost in the outfield. So there's technically only six outfielders, six and a half. But here's the thing. He grounds out to second base. The second baseman's in the outfield and stops running two-thirds down the line. So,
what's he been doing the last 2 years? He's been stopping halfway every time he hits a ground ball.
They can all play at the wall and still throw him out at first base. It's very, very sad. It must be because he can't run. Otherwise, come on, you don't start trotting at the 60.
Okay, but there's a bigger issue about this guy. Oh, and that is, you know, Eli says again, one-tenth of the season, but it is still, you know, early. We haven't seen him that many games. He looks like bleep at the plate. Now, the question is he just – guys start out bad sometimes. They're in a slump to start the season. Or is he done at his age? Are his reflexes shot? And is Miguel Cabrera never, ever going to come close to being the same player we knew?
Well, as we all know, he's had a series of injuries. But here's – what I would like to see is for him to get a little hot and at least hit about 275 or 280. I'm talking about Cabrera. And let him hit behind Jacoby Jones. And if Jacoby Jones has got somebody protecting him, he'll get more fastballs. So let's see then if Jacoby Jones can be in the best position that he can be, a guy who hits home runs and hits the ball hard. And let's see if Jacoby can withstand that. Because
Mickey's no protection for anybody, Danny.
He could be a high 280, 290 hitter.
Cabrera is 37, going on 47.
Right.
He's played on one leg last season. He managed a 282. I think he's a solid singles and doubles hitter now, but he can't get a double because he can't run that far. He had 12 homers last year, 59 RBIs. So he is in the home stretch. If he took 2 or 3 years off, that might heal his body, but by then it's too late to play. So I think we are seeing the final stage. It's been 3 years since he had a decent season. So that's it. He's worn out, if you ask me.
Let's not forget one thing with Jacoby Jones. He was supposed to bunt the one time he came up and wound up hitting a home run. So let's learn how to do some of the fundamentals in the game before we start putting them number three and wearing a Yankee monogram sooner or later.
Again, Jack said on the air, that's old school baseball. Bunting? What are you talking about?
Well, apparently they haven't seen the clips.
Yeah. I like what I've seen from Jonathan Scope. Who doesn't? Yeah. And isn't it a weird thing about this ball club? Consider the following people. Rony Garcia, Brian Garcia, Jose Cisnero, Joe Jimenez, and even Bruce Rondon. What is it with Avila and these big, fat Latino, all right-handed pitchers. They all throw in the 90s. I mean, is he collecting these guys or something?
Well, they could be Irish.
He was a Latin scout, and that brought him fame in Miami. He found so many players, including Miguel Cabrera, and the Tigers have been a very Latin-dominated team for a while. Not that that matters. But, you know, and by
can
the way,
he find a little Latin? Oh, he does have Soto, who I think is pretty good again. I think he finds somebody else. He's big, fat right-handers.
Well, I don't know about big, fat. I mean, Mickey Lolich was big and fat, and he did okay. And CeCe Sabathia was big and fat, and he did okay. So I don't think that's really an issue when you're throwing 100 miles an hour, which some of them do. You know, so I'm trying to enjoy these games. Like I said, these are spectator sports, and without the spectators, the game is just so diminished. The absence of fans is so overwhelming. Every shot with a foul ball, where there's zero people in the stands, you just can't get away from it. It's obvious. It's constant. It's deflating. And in some senses, in some ways, it looks obscene. It's just obscene to see an empty stadium. Why are we playing baseball with nobody there? So then I called my friend, my former colleague who was in charge of the Tiger broadcast, and I said, where is the spectator sound coming from?
Well, you can mention his name. Does he have a name?
Well, I'd rather not. I'd rather not, because I mentioned his name a few years ago, and I shouldn't have, and he got in trouble. So I don't know whether this is inside information or not. But the point being that I said, is it being generated from the production truck, or is it being generated from the ballpark? And I think they're doing a very good job with it. They're doing as best as they can do. Obviously, we know it's phony because there's nobody in the ballpark, but it does add some background. And so what baseball did was they sent each team an iPad with about 15 or 20 soundtracks, and they mixed them together. So you got the background sound with the occasional, you know, hot dog vendor thrown in. And then if it's a boo situation or a cheer situation, they blend in another one. So there's a guy with a soundboard like at a disco, doing the sound. It's crazy. But,
One second. I saw something this morning, and where they are with the creating it, I think they're pretty close to the end. What they're doing is they're going to let you put those seats in there, you know, the cards that they're putting in with pictures on them. What they have now figured out, they can actually take the fan sitting in his house and put the fan on that card, and they can all be on at the same time, whether it's 20, 50, or 100 people, and they can all start cheering again for real. What do you think of that?
I don't quite understand it, but maybe I wasn't listening carefully enough. I know that some parks you can buy your cutout, and some guys are
that's
buying.
That's just a cutout. These cutouts will be able to be cut out from the house to the cutout piece, and they'll be able to cheer and boo.
Yeah,
and
so they put your voice in the stadium too. Your
right,
real voice.
Absolutely. They put your picture and your voice, and like we're doing right now, you'll be animated. You will be able to scream and holler.
But don't you need 20,000 voices? Don't you need 20,000 voices? It's going to be three guys
cheering? They can
jack
up the volume.
I haven't got into the technical aspect yet, but that's what they're
obviously
doing.
Obviously so.
Eli, I'm glad you broached this issue, because I want to mention to you guys, you three guys, including Brandon, something I bet you haven't thought about. Well, I hadn't thought about it either. So Wednesday, I'm watching the Red Sox game against the Mets. Starting for the Red Sox, Matt Hall. Do you remember that guy? He was with the Tigers last year. No. Yeah, I didn't remember him either. Mm-hmm. Terrible with the Tigers, terrible this night. But listen to this. Bottom of the second, here's a foul pop-up down the right field line. Michael Conforto, of course, in right field for the Mets. He races over at Fenway, makes an amazing catch, reaching deep into the first row, and Mets announcer Gary Cohen says, think about this. If fans had been here at Fenway, how difficult would that catch have been for Conforto? They would have interfered with the ball. He never would have made the catch if there had been any Red Sox fans in those seats. Fans are trained to do that. So this is another thing about not having people at the ballpark that can affect outcomes of actual games.
That's true to me, though. That's, you know, evens out. But the fact that there is nobody there, I mean, imagine a Broadway play with nobody in the audience. It's the more I look at it, the more I just feel so sad. And the other sadness is look at what happened to the Yankees. They're sitting in their hotel rooms in Philly, but they can't play the game because the Marlins have been there and infected the ball. So, you know, this is 1870s baseball. Hey, you know what? We're near Baltimore. Call down there. Let's go play them a couple of games, because the Orioles are on the shelf because they were supposed to play the Marlins. And so they reserve 70 rooms. They fly to Baltimore and they play the Orioles. So this is the 1870s where you call and say, hey, we're going to be in your area. How about a ball game?
But Eli, the show must go on. Now, I'm reminded of an artist I knew in New York from whom I bought a painting 30 years ago. Eli's seen the painting at my house. A gay guy, Miles Parker, who told me, because I just moved to New York at that time.
Why is he gay? Why is that significant that he's gay?
Because I'm gonna do his voice. He says, Don't do his voice.
I'm trying to imitate what the guy sounded like.
Please don't make stereotypic Ebonics and gay voices.
Back
just
to the,
say what he said.
All right. And now back to the Filter sports program, ladies and gentlemen. So anyway, you know what he said to me? He said, Bob, New York just isn't what it used to be, but it's still New York. And it's the only New York we have. I feel the same way. I subscribe to the MLB Extra Innings package now. It's the only baseball we have. And I'm watching and it's okay. I'm kind of enjoying it.
Well, I'm glad you are, because
I don't understand. What do you mean it's the only base? Everybody's playing right now except for the Marlins.
It's not what it used to be. Major League Baseball, obviously, is not what it used to be. But it's the only baseball we have.
I agree.
Tremendously obvious. You're absolutely right. But what? And so is Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly is... I can't believe what he tried to do. Here's the guy who wasn't even on the baseball team a couple of years ago.
It's just for the Dodgers.
He's trying to get even with the other team. I don't get it.
Let's give the news. Denny, you've got to give the news item first.
I know. Give me a second. What was he trying to do? Establish some street cred? Is that what he was trying to do?
No, let's set up the story, then you can finish. He pitched for the Red Sox in 17, but of course 17 was when the Astros cheated and beat the Dodgers in the 7-game series, sending the Astros to the World Series instead of the Dodgers by beating on trash cans and the whole sign stealing thing. So they met for the first time Tuesday night, and Kelly in the 6th inning started throwing it. He threw behind Bregman, and then he threw behind Carlos Correa. He got suspended by 8 games, which, by the way, is a seventh, more than a seventh of the remaining season.
You know what?
How does that affect their chances? That kid's a hell of a pitcher.
You know what no one's mentioned is the fact that Joe Kelly was on the 2018 Boston Red Sox, and they cheated too. Yeah. So, I don't know.
That's a good point. Brandon, what's with his sticking his tongue out at the opposition bench? When was the last time we stuck our tongues out at people when we were like 9 on the playground somewhere?
You mean like this?
Mm-hmm. Listen. Yeah. You saw the video.
It was so childish. It was bordered on being outrageous. It really was.
Before we get into a break, Ken, just for the excitement of it, can we hear Shep's call of Jonathan Scott's?
I'm just to get us excited again.
Bring him
in anytime. I like it.
Listen up. Here we go.
How about a duplicate effort here? Tie it up. Goes the other way.
I got it.
Deep to right. Merrifield's back. Leaps and it's gone. Scoop did it again. A 2-run blast to even things at 4.
Okay, we'll get into some more baseball.
But I'm still watching the road broadcast.
That's fine. In fact, what a good thing to do would be to play the road broadcast of that homer next to Shep's to show how the interpretation can vary city to city. Hey, we encourage you to look into Power Home Solar. Power Home Solar, based right here in Detroit. It's America's fastest growing solar energy company, and all of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels made, of course, right here in America. With solar energy, you save money, save the environment, also help yourself avoid those costly and incredibly infuriating, aggravating power outages. Power Home Solar is partnered with Generac, which happens to be the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. So with Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you're protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for your in-home energy. Lower your energy bills, eliminate power outages forever. You can't beat that. Power Home Solar has financing starting at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90. Save an additional $1,800. And at the same time, support No Filter Sports. So they will continue meeting our sponsors to support us.
Hey, for you folks listening to us today in my home state of Michigan, I don't know if you know this, Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. They have 5 locations: Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman Automotive also claims Michigan's number one pre-owned status with its 1-800-PRE-OWNED Supercenter out in Waterford. You buy fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman, and then you relax with Feldman's exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back, guarantee. Goal is to make a can't-lose proposition out of this. They've done that. Feldman assures that with its exclusive guaranteed credit approval as well. And visit any of Feldman's other 9 locations, which include Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, and Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. We're confident that you're going to find what you need and what you want at one of Feldman's dealerships. Let Feldman earn your business, and at the same time, support them and support us. No Filter Sports. You can also buy, by the way, online at FeldmanAuto.com. It's hassle-free at home or in the showroom. You're listening to No Filter Sports Podcast.
Yes, you are. And I want to remind people, we forgot to say it in the beginning, who our guest is today. Our guest is John Crash Mengel. Now, you'd have to go back to the 70s to remember him playing here. He played here 4 seasons that were actually 4 very interesting seasons, 73 to 76. Incredible reputation, just being a hard-charging guard, hit the floor, diving for loose balls, big favorite of the Cobo crowd. Actually did the Piston broadcast for many, many years after his career. Bright guy. And here's something. I know you guys are aware of this. As I was looking up Mengel's record, because he played at Auburn. I want to find out why he went from Indiana in high school to go play at Auburn. But he set all these scoring records at Auburn. You know, he scored 60 points in a game. He's got the all-time scoring record for a season of 24-something. I said to myself, wait a minute, Barkley played there. I don't get it. So I look up Barkley's record. You know, Barkley in college only averaged 14 points a game. It wasn't until he got to the NBA that it became this prolific scorer. So John Mengelt is the greatest scorer in the history of Auburn basketball, which, of course, as we say, included Charles Barkley. So excited to talk to Mengel coming up a little bit later in the show.
Hey, I want to mention one more thing, if I may, from the world of baseball and what's been going on there. First of all, with COVID, the University of Miami down here is one of 89 locations around America that this week is beginning to conduct clinical trials of a vaccine developed in collaboration with the biotech companies to cure this thing. Not that we had anything to worry about it anyway, as it turns out, because word came yesterday that Denver president of basketball operations, Tim Connelly, has spoken with still another NBA genius, Michael Porter Jr., about the Nuggets forward publicly pushing a conspiracy theory that the coronavirus pandemic is, quote, it's just being used for population control, end quote. Stay tuned, film at 11. And now here comes Major League Baseball this morning. They're saying that because of what happened with the Marlins, they're encouraging road players in baseball not to leave their hotels at all. And they're not going to make them. I guess you can leave if you want to. But boy, it almost sounds like house arrest. But as I say, the show must go on.
Well, you know, if you want to play, you're going to have to follow the rules. I mean, let's not have an imbalance here that all of a sudden 2 or 3 or 4 teams are not going to play, because once that happens, it's over. They're not going to get 60 games in. Let's just hope that they get their act together. And this thing that happened with the Marlins, you know, this thing was a whole planned thing. 17, 18 of them now have tested positive, and not one other guy on the other team, Philly, had a positive test, not one. So whatever went on after that game that day was a planned event, and they all went to the event never thinking that somebody could have the virus. So we move on. We've learned something, and hopefully these kids have learned something.
Well, it means
I don't know if we do move on, Denny. I'm thinking a couple of FLs tested positive this week.
Yeah,
I'm
that's right. 5 of them.
I'm beginning to wonder if they're not going to at some point here shut baseball down and not play any more sports at all.
Very good. I don't know. Well, to me, the sad thing, and I'm going to try not to get political here, but I had to read about Louis Gomer, Gomer, the Texas congressman, All along, this is what's happened in this country. We have denigrated science, and we've lost our sense of the common good. I read a book by Robert Reich some years ago called The Common Good. And what made America great was a sense that we're all in this together, that we care about our fellow citizens, that I care about you and you care about me. And this whole thing with the masks being, I have my personal liberty so I can infect you whenever I want. If we had just listened, if we'd worn the masks, instead of saying masks are for pussies, not real men, it's an affront to my personal freedom. Had we done this, just shut up and wear the damn mask, we wouldn't be where we are today. That is, oh man, I can't believe
it. Yeah, but you know what, Eli, we're not just talking about this either. We got other stuff that comes in the same wavelength. Now the Pelicans and the Jazz are discussing a plan to kneel around the Black Lives Matter sign during the anthem of games. And here comes Steelers defensive lineman Stephen Tuitt, who actually tweeted this week, and I'm going to quote him, also, I'm not kneeling for the flag, and screw anybody who have a problem with that. My grandmother was an immigrant from the Caribbean and age and worked her ass off to bring 20 people over the right way. She had no money and educated herself to be a nurse. She living good now, end quote. So we're not in this together. You know, I mean, Jenny and I, we talked about this when you were here the other day. Okay, we'll accept that Black Lives Matter. Sure, you want to kneel. Okay, that's fine. But they're going to take this too far. You hear stuff like this, you think they're going to take this too far, and there's going to be more
trouble. Look, you know, this is so fascinating to me. We noticed this ever since George Floyd was.
Eli, before you go on, let me say something.
Go ahead.
There's no appropriate way you can talk about this without offending one side or the other.
Yep.
That's the problem with the subject matter.
Well, Bob's
you're going to offend somebody in a major way.
Let me just try and put this in perspective a little bit, even though I think this is people already know this. But in 2016, two guys in the 49ers, Kaepernick and Eric Reid, kneel for the anthem.
Right.
They said nothing. They didn't hold up any signs. They let it be known that they weren't denigrating the flag. They were or they've come from military families. They were just being upset and letting the message out in their way of saying that the police brutality against Black folks has to end. So they're reviled. Trump says, throw the sons of bitches out. Fans threaten to boycott for disrespecting the flag and the military, threatening to give up their season tickets, all that stuff. Mike Pence goes to a game in Indianapolis for the sole purpose of walking out as soon as a player kneels. Okay, 4 years later, after Kaepernick is blackballed and wins a lawsuit proving it, now the league, as I think you're alluding to, Bob, is promoting the same message. Not just promoting it, but writing it in end zones and asking players to wear it on their helmets so we can read it on every single tight shot.
They got it written across the center field stands at Fenway Park in huge letters, Black Lives Matter.
Well, they've got it in front of Mr. Trump's hotel in New York on the street.
You know, It's great to see when Roger Goodell went public and said that the football and the NFL have to work together as one, our example in actions to help conquer racism. That was wonderful. But I think at this point, the best thing is to just play sports and try and not make it all as one. I mean, there's many messages we can give. We can talk about poverty. We can talk about the climate. Why don't we put, green energy on our helmets? So it's just, I agree. It's gone too far. The message out there changed underway, but too much.
And I want your opinions on a couple of stories here. First of all, this is growing and growing, and it has been for the last week. Allegations which began on June 5th. When former Iowa offensive lineman James Daniels, now with Denny's beloved Bears, tweeted out that there are way too many racial disparities in the Iowa football program. Black players have been treated unfairly for far too long. This led to the resignation, quote unquote, with a $1.1 million buyout of the strength and conditioning coach. He's been on Kirk Ferentz's staff for 21 years. Now, it's hard for me to believe things are this bad. Ferentz is one of the most respected coaches in all of college football. Remember Desmond King, guys, out of East English High School in Detroit?
No.
He went to Iowa, one of the best cornerbacks we've had of the Big Ten the last many years. He's now with the L.A. Chargers. If racism in the Iowa program had been going on this long, don't you think somebody would have told the kid?
Wait a minute. Time out. We know from listening to John Lewis, from listening to all types of Black activists, that when you're growing up in the South, you're told by your mama, don't say anything, just accept it, just move on. You don't want to be Emmett Till. You don't want any of the stuff to happen to you. So it's been accepted for years that that's the way you have to live. That's that what you have to accept. You have to take the daily, the disparagement and the overt or covert racism. And so it's just coming to an end. So no, it doesn't surprise me. That's what players have to do, I think, in many situations. What did Willie Mays and Hank
Iowa? We're
do?
Not talking about Southeast Alabama.
Doesn't matter.
It happens everywhere, but
there's no racism in the North. Is the North free of racism? So
of course not.
Yeah. Okay. So.
And then here's the second story I wanted your opinion on in this same vein. Okay. You may have seen that a large group of University of Kentucky professors now campaigning to have Adolph Rupp's name removed from the arena. He was a racist. but he was also UK basketball, period. And so were all those white kids who chose to play for a racist coach and a racist program that would not admit black players to it. Were they racist too? If they were, Pat Riley is among that.
No.
Well, wait a minute. I'm in Kentucky this week. That's it is on page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Hell yes.
And so it's a really a big.
It's a tough call. Story. It's a tough call.
Extremely tough.
Okay. Was this a tough call for you too? The state's most prestigious, state of Michigan, prestigious and exclusive amateur golf tournament, the Horton Smith Invitational, now getting a new name, held annually at the Detroit Golf Club, as both of you know. It's a tribute to the club's former head pro and inaugural Masters champion, but they're taking his name off it. It's going to be called the Michigan Medal Play Tourney from now on. Because of what? Because the guy was a racist a long time ago.
I don't have any problem with changing a name. After all, do we call it Tiger Stadium or do we call it Comerica Park? Well, how can we change to Comerica Park? It's Tiger Stadium. How can we call it, you know, the... whatever, I'm trying to think of another Ford Field. It's
I know what you're saying.
Lion Stadium. So changing the name within reason is fine. I don't think that we should use the names of Confederate generals when you can easily change the name to something else. So there's a line to be drawn. There's always extremism that takes a good idea and then makes it to be some type of caricature of itself, unfortunately. Let's get on to football a little bit, because if baseball has this problem, and by the way, you know, when you have commissioners and leagues that aren't necessarily scientists coming up with all the protocols, there may be some holes in the system. And if baseball is struggling the way it is, then football has no chance at all, where you've got four times as many people involved, where you've got no they're going to do a full, they intend a full 16 game travel schedule every week. They got so many coaches that are over 60 years old. What are the chances? And now you got players opting out. What happens if Patrick Mahomes says, "Don't think so. I got
you mean the new owner of the Kansas City Royals?
Yeah, right.
Because he just bought a big piece of it the other day. That's how much money Mahomes has.
You got the Patriots. You have the Patriots captain, Dante Hightower, a Pro Bowler 2 years in a row, opting out of the season. Me and my fiance are more concerned with the health of our family than football, especially we have a new addition. He has a two-week-old son right in New York. You got Nate Solder, who has a child who has cancer issues, and he does. So players are opting out all the time, and they're just supposed to arrive in camp this week for football. This football season might not even get started see the issues. And now they're talking about maybe a 10 or 12 game season. They're not doing the regional thing like baseball is smart on baseball's part, because if you keep, you know, like the Tigers are all in this Midwest division. So if the Marlins fall out or whatever, you know, they can still somehow figure out who's going to make the playoffs from that division. But this is really, really ugly before it even starts. And can you imagine Brady and Gronkowski in Tampa playing in front of no fans?
Baseball, Eli. What they're going to do is pump in the crowd noise, pump up the BS, you know, and everything. And after a while, you're going to be listening to the announcers and you're going to be watching the game. And it's, as I say, it's the only football we have. You know, I mean, you're either in or you're out. Danny, are you watching baseball? Brandon, are you watching a lot of baseball?
I'm not watching it the way I once did. I mean, it's not quite as exciting without.
Yeah.
And the fans have something to do with that. They absolutely do. I mean, I like and I like on the radio, it's a lot easier for me to listen. But on the TV, I'm not really into it at all right now, even despite the fact some of the better pitchers are pitching more often than I thought they would.
Yeah. You know, it's.
By the way, I did ask Brandon. He shook his head. Yes, he's watching.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. I didn't see that.
No, it's fine. Yeah. I've been watching as many games as I can. I love it.
And how much does the fact that fans aren't there detract from your enjoyment?
I mean, it looks weird. It looks weird, but you know what? I enjoy hearing a loud bat crack every once in a while. And it is interesting talking about no fans, so there's going to be no fan interference. Now is the time for the Chicago Cubs to bring back Steve Bartman and let him sit by himself at Wrigley Field for every single game.
Or the kid
game.
In Yankee Stadium with Richie Garcia, the umpire. Remember that in the playoffs a number of years?
Well, Brandon, one other thing, too. If you like hearing that crack of the bat and the ball coming off of it and hitting the line drive somewhere, you should have been a bat boy.
You know,
I want to ask one more question, though. Since Brandon does apparently watch a lot of this stuff more than I have not seen yet, a Fox game where apparently they have some kind of video of fans, real fans, taken from previous years in the backstop. So it looks like they're actual fans there. Have you seen that, Brandon? What's that like?
Oh, no, I really haven't. I've just noticed in different parks they're doing different things. There's some people who obviously have the cutouts just in the outfield. There's some who have the cutouts behind the home plate that you can see. I've also seen, like, Minnesota has those big fat heads. They have those sitting in the stands. Yeah. But to tell you the truth, I haven't even seen Fox's, like, simulated video game fans. I haven't even seen those anywhere. I've just been watching a lot, and the noise to me, the crowd noise, I think sounds good.
Yeah,
I think
they're doing a good job.
And so,
yeah. So what we're talking about, Eli and Danny, what Brandon and I are mentioning is this. On Wednesday night, the Toronto Blue Jays trotted out this kid that they say is the next coming of Denny McClain and Sandy Koufax all rolled into one. Throws over 100 miles an hour. Unbelievable breaking stuff. It was his major league debut. Of course I watched some of that. Sure. So it's still interesting to me.
Well, had I known, I'd have watched it.
Now, I'm supposed to know the answer to this, and I can find out the answer, but I haven't yet. And Brandon and Denny, if you're watching the Tiger telecasts, there's no commercials. There's no commercials.
Yeah, none.
They spend a minute and a half to just show baseball extra innings logo. And where are the sponsors? If people are watching, if the ratings are massive, I don't get it. There's promos for the Boys Club.
I don't either.
Where is Tim Horton? Where is the Ford deal? Where is all this stuff? I hate bringing it up without having the answer. I'm going to find out today, but I record the game and I shuttle through and I realize, wait a minute, there's no commercials. There should be a huge demand. I wish I had the answer to that, but I don't. I'll get it.
I think we got a couple new sponsors
coming back with us.
Brandon, you got it?
So I think people will come back. Sponsors are coming back to the games. Well, I think they will.
Why aren't they there? Brandon, you have an idea why they're not there now?
I think it might be dependent on where you're watching the game. For example, right now, if you have any type of cable package or anything like that, I'm pretty confident that they will let you watch any baseball game anywhere. For example,
that's what I have. I have the Major League Baseball. I watch, not only can I watch every single game, every single day in Major League Baseball, I got my choice of either broadcast, home or away.
Yeah. Well, you pay for that.
You know what it cost me for the rest of the season? $90. I got $90.
Well, yeah,
it's okay.
But right now, there's kind of a free trial where everybody and anybody can also watch. So, for example, last night I went to the Minnesota and St. Louis game, and sure enough, it popped over to the Minnesota coverage. So, I was watching the Fox Sports Minnesota, and yeah, when I went to commercials, there was nothing. And I think that's only because I'm in Detroit. You know what I mean? And I don't know how that whole thing works out, because when I was watching the Dodgers and Astros, I was seeing Los Angeles commercials.
Then, son, you learned a valuable lesson. Eli and I have been trying to teach you for how long? Record every game. Then the black that you looked at last night, you fast forward through it in 4 seconds.
I need to see everything in real time.
Let me add something to this, because I think I'm getting commercials for one reason. I am, obviously. But what's happening is they're cutting off the play-by-play guys and going to a commercial and then coming back, and the play-by-play guys are still doing their little chirping.
Well, what Brandon is saying is obviously the case, that Major League Baseball has taken control of all of these games,
and it's a
massive network. So maybe why you're not seeing spots, and I'm here in Bloomfield Hills, is because a lot of them are local spots in my particular zip code, and maybe none of the local sponsors are sponsoring anymore because no businesses are open. But still, it seems strange that it's that way. Wow. We got John Mengel coming up in a little bit. I want to talk about Mike Tyson and Roy Jones for a moment too. But first,
I want to talk about my Catholics in a few minutes over at Notre Dame.
Okay, you can do that. You can talk about
your
Catholics.
We don't do religion on this show, Denny.
But I want to talk about Luke Nowacki.
They're hardly religious.
You mean they're not all Irish?
All Irish with the name Que Pasa Chico.
I haven't talked to Luke in a while. I'm going to call him today and see what he thinks about all of this. He's a big sports fan. Luke Nowacki, that is our financial expert on the show of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. You should call Luke at 248-663-4748. Now's the time to get some peace of mind about the future. See if he can help you figure out where you stand in this crazy time we have. But amazingly enough, the stock market has done well. What did I see today? That the GDP is down, the economy is down 33%. staggering numbers, but there's still investment opportunities out there, and you got to take care of your money. You got to know what to do with it. So call Luke. Most of us don't spend enough time doing this. 248-663-4748. He is a A-plus financial manager. Answer all your questions. Complimentary consultation, as always. Reach your financial goals. Call Luke at 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. Other marketing names, product services, offered through independent Royal Alliance Associates.
We've had any number of you guys write the mail back and say, why do you talk about the coronavirus so much? Because that's what's going on. That's why we talk about it so much. It's changed the world. Fortunately, what hasn't changed is the opportunity to make smart financial decisions. And one of those is to take advantage of dramatically low interest rates and refinance your home through David Hall Mortgage. Eli did it. You've seen and heard David for more than three decades in Michigan, because he and his team have maintained leadership in the mortgage market by consistently offering better options and better personal attention. That gives rise to low mortgage payments, lower ones, and the most satisfied clients. So if you refinance now, you can probably skip up to your first two payments. Hall Financial has also sustained its leadership by providing the fastest service in the business, generally 3 weeks or less. It's enabled them to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners like you. Go to DavidHallMortgage.com and click on the logo to get started, or just give them a call. Here's the number, 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
We were talking earlier about players who opt out of the NFL, for example, the six Patriots and many others. You know, they're basing their safety a lot on protocols that they hand out, but also it's an honor system. It's an honor system, like in baseball. You know, you're encouraged not to have any non-family contacts. You're encouraged to only leave for essential reasons. You're encouraged to not eat at public restaurants, but it's left to be voluntary. And look what's happened. As you said, Denny, why did 17 Marlins get infected and no Phillies? Because they either didn't wear masks, they hung out together. In the games themselves, even with that little brawl that wasn't a brawl, but what you mentioned earlier with the Astros and the Dodgers, they were all pushing and shoving. Nobody's wearing a mask. Well, it takes
That's one of the reasons they're saying that he got such a stiff suspension, because it precipitated all these people violating the personal space restrictions.
But let's suspend him for something he did. It's real easy to hit a hitter. It really is. I mean, if he wanted to hit somebody, and he throws the ball pretty well, he could have hit either one of those guys. What was wrong about what he did? He had nothing to do with the original issue. You know, I mean, again, it looked like he was trying to find street cred, and he did a terrible job at it.
I disagree with you on that front, because prior to this season, it was pretty well known that everybody in the league was going to throw at the Astros. I mean, they got plumped a ton.
But they haven't.
Too.
But they haven't, Brandon.
What do you mean they haven't?
Nobody, you know, except for him, nobody's throwing at the players.
Are you kidding? I don't know about that. Nor do you. You haven't watched all the games.
I haven't watched all the games,
but you know what? Every time somebody throws at a player, you're going to see a picture of it. You're going to see a guy on his back. You're going to see somebody screaming and hollering or yelling dirty, nasty things to each other like what happened the other night.
I'm only saying that Altuve and Bregman got plunked a ton in spring training, and I think that's going to be pretty much the case for the remainder of the year. People are mad that they got caught cheating.
It won't happen.
Washington manager Dave Martinez said, "I'll be honest with you, I'm scared. I really am." You know, baseball started with this concept of doing hub cities and a bubble. But as Adam Ottavio of the Yankees said, you hear people say this was expected. Well, so that's reckless, in my opinion. A lot of guys didn't want to go into the bubble, which the NBA, by the way, the NBA bubble. Can you imagine NBA players, no sex for 2.5 months?
I can't.
Impossible.
But
we're
all older guys in long-term relationships. It can be done, I'm telling you.
Well, that's not the case in the NBA. There are many guys.
But Bob, you can't dribble.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm trying to think of analogies, like, you know, the Broadway play, you know, spectators, et cetera. You know, as they scramble to make this season, where the Yankees run over to the Orioles to try and get a couple of games in just in case, this is like, I had an analogy of one of those chef shows where you got 20 minutes to run and grab ingredients and make something that they'll eat. This is what it's like. Let's scramble over here because they can't play this week because they got COVID. Maybe let's get a couple of games in here and then we'll fly back there and get a couple of
it's can we move on?
Let me throw one thing out. Okay. You may get a chuckle out of this. You may not get a chuckle. I was watching the rugby match this morning. They're either in Ireland or somewhere. That's how bad
you are desperate
this morning. But you know what? That's a real man's game. I gotta tell you. They kick and they grab and they punch and they squeeze. And somebody really gets hurt there before it's all over. They were all drinking out of the same water bottle. Same water bottle.
When I went to school at Michigan, rugby was a not a varsity sport. It was a club sport. Yeah. And these guys had bumper stickers that say, "It takes leather balls to play rugby."
It really does. And sometimes, you know, you see these games as Denny did this morning, and you look at the players on the field, and you think, God, that guy be a hell of a middle linebacker in the NFL. You know, that's what they do. So the good news is, I kind of like this story. I don't know if you saw it yet, but after next season, the Pistons are going to switch their minor league affiliate from Grand Rapids. And they're going to have a new Gatorade League team. They've just purchased the Northern Arizona Suns from the Phoenix Suns. So they're going to rebrand the team. And they're going to play in Wayne State's brand new basketball arena in the city of Detroit. Good. Yeah, I mean, I read the Detroit papers every day of my life. I didn't know they were doing that. So they're going to be open with an interesting team. And get this, folks. The Pistons want you fans to pick the team name. Ideas for team names can be submitted at Pistons.com. Before August 11th. That should be fun. I think that'll be good.
This day, I want to do this on this day because we're getting ready to go to John McGill pretty soon. Okay. I remember this. In 1959, I was 9 years old. I was away for the summer with my parents at some lake somewhere. And I read the paper every day. That was what baseball was like then. There was no really other sport besides it. There weren't that many games on TV. So it was all about reading. And a guy named Willie McCovey made a major league debut, went 4-for-4 with 2 triples. And I just, as a kid, I'm thinking, wow, if he does that his first game, he's going to be the greatest player that ever played the game. Imagine going 4-for-4 with 2 triples. As it turns out, he had 521 homers, and he obviously couldn't keep it up every day. But it's those little things that connect us to baseball and sports. And so I remember that so well.
You're right. You know why? I gave up one run in the 3 appearances I made in the All-Star game. And guess who hit it?
Don't throw him a changeup, Willie McCovey.
That's right. Mayo Smith said, before you go out there, I want to tell you one thing. Never throw him a changeup. And I got him 2 balls and 2 strikes, threw him a changeup that was about 6 or 8 inches off the plate. He hit it 19 miles.
Yeah, can I speak? That's interesting because while I'm watching the game last night, you saw the Kansas City thing. So, Bob, you didn't hear this. But in analyzing Boyd, who struggled last night, Boyd, who's their ace, struggled again, gave up 4 runs, I think, in the first 4 innings. And Jack said, Jack, although he's a homer, he makes some pitching observations that are very astute, I think, as a Hall of Famer can do it. And he said he doesn't really have a changeup. He can't throw. He needs to learn a changeup. He hasn't. Only one of his first 37 pitches was a changeup. Then he throws one that I think was hit for a home runner or something like that. And it was very, very interesting that he was talking about the problems that Boyd has. And he also said, interestingly, Denny, because he was throwing these 93-mile-an-hour fastballs, they were just hitting all over the ballpark. And he said his 93-mile-an-hour fastball isn't, and he was comparing it to Rony Garcia, who the ball just seems to jump out you. He was saying his 93 isn't like another guy's 93 because the guys can see it coming better. I don't quite understand that, but explain that.
What I think he means by that is his pitches do not move. I mean, yeah, his little curveball does, his little slider moves, but his fastball is like a straight string. And if he's only throwing it at 92, 93 miles an hour, I'll tell you, that's in for a beating. And he's not pitching well at all. And I suggest that he needs to get it in the wheelhouse pretty soon. Otherwise, we're going to have some guys with names we've never heard of before pitching, because they need to stay above 500 some way, somehow, to keep us interested.
He was such a hot commodity a couple of years ago. And I said, the worst thing that can happen to him is to stay with this team and not go somewhere else where he can get the big money. 1965, explain this, Denny. Milwaukee manager Bobby Bragan says his pitchers threw 75 to 80 spitballs in a 9-2 loss to the Giants. That's an illegal pitch. Why would he admit that? I didn't even get that.
Well, Denny wasn't there. How would he know?
Well, I was playing then. I mean, there's the spitball was a big pitch back then. And it wasn't spit so much as it was Vaseline or Preparation H and things like that. Because the heavier the substance, the more the ball will go down, straight down. And the real good spitters go straight down. Frank Larry had a great spitter that you just wouldn't have imagined how quick the ball can disappear.
And I remember one of the heroes of my childhood, Jim Bunning, used his belt buckle to cut the stitches on the ball.
That's tough, though, because that can only happen for one pitch, maybe two pitches at the most. That's a very, very difficult thing to do.
61 Phillies lost the first of 23 straight games. Can you really lose 23 games in a row in baseball? That's stunning.
Yeah, that's tough,
I also think you got to go. It looks like Brandon is signaling us frantically, right? No?
Okay. No, no.
No.
Well, he's making all these hand signals. I don't know what the hell he's doing there. You got to say something, kids.
That's a bunt. He's giving you the bunt.
He's telling me
the bunt sign.
He's telling me it's time to say goodbye to our radio listeners.
No, he says no, not yet.
Are you out there, by the way, down in Toledo? Can you hear us? Are you on WCWA? Because we're there. In any case, we got to say
goodbye. Believe me, they're there. They are there.
You have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. John Mangelt coming up in a couple of minutes. That's pretty much all I got. Phil Rizzuto entered the Hall of Fame in 94. That was the main reason why Alan Trammell, I think, had to get in. Phil Rizzuto was a Yankee, 273 lifetime hitter with 38 homers. In my view, wasn't really a Hall of Fame.
One of my favorite guys I ever knew in baseball.
Oh, yeah. Good guy. Yeah. George Steinbrenner forced by Commissioner Faye Vincent to resign with the Yankees.
Not one of my favorite guys I ever knew in baseball.
Who, George?
Yeah.
Yes, George.
George was a nice man.
I like George, actually, but I mean, come on. I mean, the stuff that he pulled, the shenanigans stuff.
I felt like the king of Saudi Arabia when he bought the Tampa racetrack down there. Man, I had the world when he had that track.
Can we do a quick mailbag? That's all I got.
Yeah, we don't need a quick one, but I got to mention a couple more things here since we're talking about old baseball guys. We would be remiss if we didn't mention that John McNamara passed away on Tuesday.
Oh, I didn't know.
The manager
he was. Yeah, he sure did.
Six major league teams, and also the great Illinois coach, Lou Henson, whom I knew, died at 88. Both those guys were 88 past week. He's the winningest coach in the history of Illinois. And I want to tell you something else about Lou Henson that most people don't know. Lou started coaching in the college ranks in 1962 at Hardin-Simmons in Abilene, Texas. As a condition of taking that Hardin-Simmons job, Lou Henson insisted that the team and thus the school be racially integrated, a condition to which the university agreed.
Well, good. They won't chop down his statue then.
All right. You want to go to mailbag now? Is that what you want to do?
Go to the bag.
All right. Let's start off with one of our big regular listeners about the show we did with Stanley Edwards the other day, Robbie Silverman, who tweeted us, and you can tweet any of us, at Eli Zarrett, at you, at MU2 Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. Robbie goes, dang, in capital letters, Stanley Edwards was tremendous. What the hell is this? Mangelt just popped up on our screen here. He's going to do with us. He's sitting in front of the ocean somewhere, relaxing. It's sunny.
Wait a minute. That's got to be some type of poster behind him. That can't be a real life.
I can't believe that.
It's a view from my office at my beach house.
Oh, very nice.
Is that a painting? You know what, Eli? Let's do the painting.
No. Isle of Palms, South Carolina.
All right. Wow. Those
beautiful
ocean
place.
Waves. Look at that.
Beautiful
yes.
place.
All right. We got Mangelt with us already, so let's do the mailbag after we're finished.
Okay, let's do that. Okay. John Crash Mangelt played four of his 11 NBA seasons here with the Pistons from 72 to 76, and what would turn out to be his final Piston game, game six of the playoffs against the Warriors in 76, in a fourth quarter comeback attempt, Mangelt put on a typically gritty performance, impressing color analyst the great Jerry West.
The Warriors by four. Bill Smith with 35 points for Golden State, leading all scorers. Bob Lanier has scored 24 for Detroit. Mangelt hits. Again, it's a two-point game. And Detroit forces the ball quickly down court. Mangelt, who was an Auburn linebacker in addition to an SEC Player of the Year in basketball, drives down the lane and he crashes to the floor and the whistle blows.
John Mangelt gives 100% every minute on the floor.
He loves it.
You better believe he loves it. His nickname is Crash.
Went to Auburn because they let him play football as a linebacker in basketball. So Crash Mangelt is right up, bounces up like a greyhound with 5:14 to go, and he is heading for the free throw line.
And before taking the free throws, Mangelt actually had to take a quick breather to recover from being smashed to the floor. What a character you were back in the day. And you were playing hurt in the 76 playoffs, but I guess that didn't slow you down, did it?
My philosophy is you played hurt, not injured. And you were hurting a little bit. And I will have to say, I learned that from a lot of my mentors in the NBA, one of them being the distinguished Dave Bing. Dave played hurt, practiced hurt. He did it all.
Not only that, John, he has eye poked out as a kid, and he still played basketball, which is stunning anyway. Go ahead, Danny. I'm sorry.
John, where did the name Crash come from, the nickname?
Actually, that's kind of an interesting story. Well, Norm Van Leer had the name Crash. And my rookie year, we were together in Cincinnati, Norm and I were. And in the preseason game, he and I went diving for a loose ball and hit heads. And he got 10 stitches and I got nothing. So after the game, he said, Mengelt is Crash 1W and I'm Crash B2. Which I assume he meant black too, and Mengelt's white one. I became Crash. I stole his nickname.
You know, I want to get into you coming to the Pistons and everything, but first we got to talk. You grew up in Indiana and were an all-star as a basketball player and a football player. How'd you wind up going to Auburn, and how did that decision come about?
I had a lot of offers in football, not very many in basketball, and Auburn had, you know, back in those days, you know, you didn't have, you know, any of the resources to be able to really recruit outside your kind of regional area. I mean, it just wasn't heard of. But they had sent somebody up to the Indiana State Championship to watch a guy by the name of John Suter, who went to Tulane later to play. They were recruiting him. And the rumor is, and it's a false rumor, is that we got the tip off. I went left, I went right, and dunked over Suter. Well, dunking was illegal then, and plus I couldn't dunk if I prayed all day. So I had a good game against him. I think they tried to recruit Suter, couldn't do it. Recruited me, and, you know, I left Indianapolis on a late mid-March day in a blizzard and got to Columbus, Georgia, which is where you flew to then, and it was 80 degrees and sunny. I got to campus and saw the Southern female genetics and decided this is a pretty good place.
If you guys will indulge me one more time, I was saying earlier in the show that I see all the scoring. You scored 60 points in a game, one of only 19 players to ever do that in college basketball. You're the number one career scorer at Auburn, 24.8. So I look and said, well, didn't Barkley play there? And I realized Barkley only averaged 14 points a game. So explain that, because he was a 30-point scorer in the pros.
Charles had a bunch of really good scorers with him, you know. And they had a much, you know, better team than we did. When I went to school, Auburn, I mean, it was football. I mean, it was, you know, basketball was something you did when it wasn't football season. And Charles, he has unique game. And people who have unique games in the NBA, where you really, it's hard to prepare for them, you know, they usually excel. And Charles had a big, wide body, could jump. Knew really well how to use his body, okay, which was very important posting up in the NBA, because in those days it was a low post kind of big man's game, and Charles is tremendous. I love Charles. He's good man. For Auburn. He was a great NBA player, and he does a lot for our university.
Hey, John, first of all, Chuck Monin, one of our listeners, tweeted this out to me today when he heard you were going to be on. He's a Michigan fan. He says, tell Crash every time I go to Auburn and enjoy a delicious lemonade from Toomer's Drugstore, I pause over Mengelt's star on the Auburn Walk of Fame and I toast his excellence. Isn't that nice, John? And you're living back there now.
Yes, I am. I built a home here. And moved a couple of years ago. I'm so involved down here that I got tired of flying down here, staying at hotels. Yeah, we do have a Walk of Fame along, you know, on four block area downtown. Toomer's Lemonade is famous, and I appreciate that he toasted me.
Can you buy any spirits to put in that lemonade to make it palatable?
Well, if you walk down the street, because my my star used to be in front of a bank, which I thought was pretty good. Yeah. Now it's in front of a bar.
Well, I look, Auburn has changed so much, and so has the SEC. But you're a Yankee from Indiana, and you go down there, and there are no black players in that league. You have no black teammates. I'm sure you grew up with playing with and against black kids. The racism that was extant at that time, what was that like for you?
I guess I don't even. We had Perry Wallace was black. He was at Vanderbilt. He was the first black athlete in the SEC. And then we recruited my sophomore year a fellow by the name of Henry Harris, who was the first black athlete here. All I can say in the jock dorm, there was no race. Henry was as welcome as anybody else in the jock dorm. Back then you had athletic dorms. I don't know what it was like for him outside the athletic dorm because I didn't hang with Henry. Tuskegee's right down the road. Yep. I'm sure he had a lot of his social life there, as well as some places in Auburn and Opelika and Phoenix City. But I didn't feel any racism here. There was some instances on the road a couple of times, two or three times, that Henry had that we took care of. But
did you guys did you guys ever stand up and say, this is not fair? This is not fair. How come we don't have any black players in this league?
It never was a thought because we played a lot of teams that had, African-American players. So it just didn't rise to... Yeah. Something I thought about a lot.
It's the way life was back then. It's just what it is.
That's exactly right. And a lot of controversy with the Cleveland Indians, the Washington Redskins. How has Auburn been able to avoid, with the name War Eagles, all of that controversy?
It'll come up probably. I don't understand all that, but I'm not very good at politics.
Yeah.
But I doubt very seriously where they're going to change War Eagle here. It's a tradition we've had for a long, long time. And I would be very disappointed if we did that. I don't think it has any racism in it. But
I don't either.
Yeah.
Well, you played a lot of games against Kentucky in your college career. A large portion of the professors there want to take Adolph Rupp's name off the arena. How do you feel about that?
He just says he doesn't want to be political. He doesn't want to be political. You can say next question.
Why do they want to take it off? Did they say?
Well, he's a racist, and he had all white programs, wouldn't take black kids.
He recruited one of the first black kids in the league, too. I think the third. I don't know Adolph Rupp enough to say that he was a racist or not. I was on his radio show once, but that was it.
Good answer. Hey, let's get into this. You're the 21st pick in the draft in 1971. You play a year with Cincinnati, then they become Kansas City. They trade you to the Pistons in the 72-73 season, shortly after the season starts. They'd been an awful franchise, just muddling around. And the next three or four years were actually pretty good. Ray Scott trades a second-round pick. Talk about the rise. You had some decent. He also got Don Adams at the same time. So they go from a really a lackluster team to a pretty good one. What was it like, as they rose up and you had that great playoff series with the Bulls in 74? It was a pretty good time, wasn't it, to be a Piston for those few years?
I think really good teams are created by players who understand what their position is on a team. And I think what happens is people accept their roles, fill those roles, you start winning, and everybody gets accolades. So that's what happened to those Piston teams. I think Ray got Dave and Bob to play together and to understand their roles, got everybody else to understand their roles. And, you start winning, nobody's complaining, everybody's happy. And I think that helped us. Sometimes, when you get teams like that, they end up being better than their talent, than the sum of their talent. And that's what really happened to those teams in those years. They were We all got along on and off the field, on the bus, in the arena, in practice, everything. And when that happens, you're going to win more games than you lose. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, you go back to that era, and you played against Wilt, you know, you played against Bill Russell, you played against so many people, Jerry West, whatever. Could you name five players off the top of your head who were the greatest players in NBA history, in your opinion?
Ones I played against, or the ones I...
The ones you played against and with, yeah. No, not LeBron and not Kobe and those guys, no.
Yeah, your era.
Well, Wilt was the strongest, nastiest guy I'd ever seen. my rookie year, I'll go back to my rookie year, Cousy, he was my coach, and he would say, if you get switched off on Wilt, or Wilt gets the ball, foul him, because he's down low and he'll just dunk it. But he hated to go to the free throw line. So one time I got switched off on him, and he went up to – he always took a dribble before he dunked. So he dribbled the ball, and I grabbed both arms, and he literally lifted me off the floor. I mean, he's that strong. And he dunked the ball, and I kind of fell to the floor, and he went and helped me up. And he said, I like you, boy, but don't ever do that again. And I said, yes, sir, Mr. Chamberlain, I will never do that again.
Who else?
All those guys.
Yeah, Oscar was a little overweight when I played him, but I remember the first time I guarded him, I held him to 39 and felt I did a pretty good job. Yeah, people forget, they go crazy over triple doubles, and he averaged one for a year and a half. Jerry West was, you didn't think he was hard to guard, and he would always like silently murder you. You'd look at the end of the game, you think you did a good job on him. He had 30 and 12 assists, and you're going, God, I thought I was really guarding him well. I think that he was just a tremendous player, especially in the fourth quarter. Havlicek was a different kind of player. He just never quit. He never got tired. It drove me nuts. He'd run all over the place. You'd be guarding him. There'd be a free throw, and I'd be there breathing hard, and he wouldn't even be breathing. And it'd be, I said, John, how do you do that? I mean, you don't even never tire. So his endurance and his ability just to wear you out, I think, was made him one of the greatest players ever. And I think another player who is overlooked somewhat because his career was shortened by a knee injury was Nate Archibald. Mm-hmm. I played with Nate his first year. It was his second year. It was my first year. And he was just such a great instinctive player. I always said, guys, if I brought the ball down on a fast break, and, I would find the most open guy. Nate would find the guy who he was assured that had the best chance to score if he passed the ball to. He was that good at being able to analyze the floor. And then, of course, I always admired Dave Bing. Dave was just a great mentor, someone really great to play with in the backcourt, and somebody to be your friend. And Dave was one of those guys, and I always admired him.
You went to the next generation as well. So you actually also played against Kareem. You start a franchise, any one of those three guys in their prime, Kareem, Wilt, Russell, whom do you take?
I play against Kareem, yeah. Probably Kareem, I guess, because of his versatility. Mm-hmm. And his ability to play both defense and offense, his agility to get up and down the floor better. You really couldn't push him one way. If your total focus was to shut Wilt off, you could. You'd make him pass the ball, which he was a pretty good passer, by the way. I didn't play against Russell very much. I think just 1 year, and he retired. So I didn't really get a good – and Wilt was like 3 years. But I think in that era – it would be him. And in any era, it would be Michael Jordan. I just I think Michael was the best talent, psychological leader, you know, that there's ever been. He made everybody on that team 25% better.
Yeah, and I always thought he was a complete gamer. That's what I looked at him for. He was a 100% gamer all the time. He was ready.
Yeah. Now, there's been a lot of great behind LeBron. I mean, you could go on and on about great players, but Michael made everybody a lot, lot better. And I didn't – he was my neighbor, but I didn't play against him. But, I broadcast games when he played, and I still have season tickets for 39 years. I watched him play a lot, man, and I'd think I'd seen it all, and then I'd go, wow, I didn't see that before.
Yeah. When you played down at Cobo Arena, I started my career around 75, during that era that you say where you guys got along great, you liked each other. There was also a vibe at Cobo. They left Cobo shortly after you left the Pistons, but you had sophisticated fans. You had really a lot of from the city. You had a great mix of white and black fans who really understand the game. They loved you because of the way you played. And so there was the vibe at Cobo. You had dancing Gus up in the arena, up in the rafters there. I think
we all remember.
people who remember that era at Cobo, even though there are only 6,000-7,000 fans a night many times, it was really kind of, just look back what it was like, your relationship with the fans, them with you, and what the vibe was at Cobo.
Cobo didn't have ice underneath it because they didn't play hockey there, which was a great advantage. Most of those arenas had ice under them, and the floor would be cold and sometimes even a little bit slippery, depending upon the humidity in the building. Cobo was one of the first places that had seats right around the floor. People probably don't remember that, but they had these crummy seats that guys on the floor sat. There was a group of guys, black and white, underneath the basket on the one end in bleachers. I mean, there were bleachers there, and they would bring their own booze in. They'd hide it under the bleachers. And if anybody on the other team messed with you, they'd be right out on the floor, man. I mean, these guys were great fans. And we had the organ guy in the one end zone who played Benny in the Jets when we come on the floor. Yeah,
and that's all he knew how to play.
And I forgot Leon the Barber. Oh, my goodness.
Leon the Barber. Lick him, John. He'd say, lick him, John. He's always lick my fingers because I get the dust off of him.
Yeah, I remember crazy. That.
He'd say, lick him, John. And he'd be hollering at Ray who to put in the game. He put Bing back in, Ray. Jesus, put Bing back in.
Sadly, though, Bill Davidson bought the team after – Bill Davidson is in the Hall of Fame and is viewed as one of the great owners in basketball history. But he bought that team and sold you like a piece of cattle. He didn't even get a player back for $500,000. He sold players. He didn't pay Dave Bing. And the great thing you seem to have going – in 74 after that great series of the Bulls that just was so defensively powerful and it just really resonated with fans all across the league, it all kind of broke up, and it's kind of a shame. Do you have a bad feeling at the way that good team that was being built that could have sustained just fell apart?
I like Bill Davidson. I got to know him a little bit after I retired from the NBA. I think those guys bought that team and really didn't know what they were doing. We had five or six guys whose options were up. And of course, Denny knows all about this. You had an option year that you had to play at 105% of your previous year's salary. And I just simply told him I wasn't going to do that. And I just said, we've had great years here. We've turn this franchise around, not me, but a group of guys. And I would assume the rest of them told him the same thing. It's why he traded Bing first and then Chris and Curtis Rowe and then sold me. At least I knew I was worth $500,000. That was, I told my wife that. She says, not here, you're not. But, they did learn, right? I mean,
they learned
how to, there were smart business people and they learned, and obviously built a great team, a great brand, and a great franchise, and won championships. And I think Bill's the only guy to win the NBA and the Hockey League championship in the same year in the Tampa Bay. So
you had
they were smart. They just needed to learn a little bit.
You had a lot of great ball games. The four that come to mind, though, the night you scored 60, then 48, 47, and 45. I pitched a long time, too. And my question is, did you ever know when it was going to happen that night? I never did.
The better
I felt in the bullpen, the worse I was.
I even think I missed, you know, like, five out of my first six shots tonight, I got 60.
Yeah, it's Alabama, right? I want to.
Yeah, against Bama, which is you know they hate Bama here, so it's it was on Valentine's Day. Got an interesting story. I had a date with a cheerleader after that.
Nice.
Yeah, my parents were in town. And,
did you get lucky?
She stood me up. I said, "How can you get stood up after getting 60 on Valentine's Day?" And then I found out she got what they called pinned back then, sorority fraternity, to Johnny Musso, who was a football player at Alabama at the time.
Oh, geez.
So I said, but at least you could have called me. I mean, it told me. I was pretty embarrassed. I had my parents, set them up with this good-looking – said, well, I'm going to have this good-looking cheerleader going out with me after the game. Hope you'll take us to dinner. And, of course, they would. And, my dad, Ralphie, said, geez, John, you got 60 – must have been that free throw you missed is why she didn't come with us. I said, I don't know. We'll have fun regardless.
You talk about Johnny Musso, and I bet you've seen a lot of him over the years because you both have lived in Chicago.
Right. His son was at Northwestern too,
Yeah. So I want to mention, because you said that Bill Davidson and Ozzie Feldman and a couple of the guys were such great businessmen. So were you, John. When your basketball career ended, you founded Breckenridge Partners. You made millions as a guy running an executive search firm. And how do I know millions? I'm looking at the view over your shoulder, the ocean right now.
It's a picture.
Okay.
So what was it? You just needed to rechannel your athletic competition.
Yeah, I did not like the phrase dumb jock. Okay. Never did. And so I think Ed Badger was my last coach with the Bulls. I think Ed made about $52,000 a year, you know, and I said, well, with my wife, that's not enough. So I wanted to prove myself in business. And there was a guy down the street who was in the executive search business, and he tried to recruit me to come to his firm, and he did. And I worked for him for like 2 or 3 years, didn't like some of his partners. Ethics. So I told him and he wouldn't let him go. So I left and started my own firm. And for those people out there who don't know what executive search is that I get paid up front to recruit my particular business CEOs and kind of direct reports or other kind of special hard to find people. And we've done about, I think I'm on my 1,013th search.
Wow.
Early on, everybody gets lucky in their life. I got lucky twice. One is Ernst & Young hired me to start their consulting firm. So rather than buying one, I recruited over 250 partners for them in their consulting business. And then I also focused in IT and finance, right in the dot-com era where everybody wanted an IT person to run their company and a finance person to take them public. And so there was a lot of pressure and a lot of competition in those areas. And so searches were very plentiful. Later on, you know, everybody gets bored, right? I decided I was wanting to recruit different kinds of people. And I recruited all the people that mapped the human genome for a company called Celera.
Really?
Yes.
And then that includes Craig Venter, too.
Venter, yes, sir. Ian Smith, Newbaro fan. Yeah, the NIH was trying to do it. They were in their seventh year, and a guy by the name of Mike Hunkapeller invented a computer that would kind of do this much faster, and they did it in 16 months.
Wow.
And growing up in Indiana, I also recruited the guy that ran, you know, IRL racing. So it's the dichotomy of those kinds of recruiting was interesting to me because I'd always learn a lot. I just finished the CEO for the Academy of Country Music, which was fun.
Wow. You know?
Different.
We don't know what that is. We're all Michigan people.
Okay.
Well, John,
yeah, they sell where the only the, believe it or not, the only music business that sells more business than them is the Christian music business.
Yeah, that's right, John. I got one more for you. Sure. I'm a pretty special guy, and you could recruit me because I lost 22 one year. You got a spot for a guy that lost 22?
I always got a spot who won 31 too.
I appreciate that.
Touché.
Hey, John, you know, your great career that continues. You're a tough ball player. You're a smart businessman. Really appreciate reliving sure some is of the days, some of the great moments in Cobo and NBA. And thanks for joining us. Really.
Well, you're wrapping up. Can I ask one more question? Because people are going to wonder why we didn't. And that is simply, what do you think of what's going on in the NBA with all the Black Lives Matter demonstrations?
He doesn't want to talk politics.
To be controversial, don't you?
Doesn't want to talk politics. Leave him alone on that stuff.
And playing, then just talk about this, playing in the bubble and trying to start the season. You think that's a good idea?
I think a bubble would be fun, but my daughter would have loved the bubble. hey, look, I play with all different kinds of people, races, creeds, whatever. I always judge people by their character, not their damn color. All lives matter to me, okay? Yep. I mean, I really believe that. Especially children's lives. And we need to take better care of our children than we're doing right now. And I hope what happened in Minnesota was ugly. It was nasty. But what's happening now with all the rioting is not good either. I mean, our children are watching this, and I got grandkids that just turned 7 Monday, and, you know, they were here and they asked me questions about that. It's very difficult to explain all that stuff.
Yep. Terrible.
So, I was always a guy that I played, you know, I don't tweet. I don't do any of that stuff. my daughter put me on Facebook or I wouldn't be on there. I don't want anybody to know what I'm doing. So, drives me nuts. People tell me what they had for dinner on Facebook.
I mean, I agree with you.
I don't really care what you had for dinner. I hope we get all this settled and we get back to opening up this country, and so I can go to some damn football and basketball games.
we all
hope. John, I only look on Facebook to see who wants to invite me to dinner. That's the only thing I look for.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a great place for dinner once in a while.
John, again, I think I can say goodbye to you now unless somebody else pops in again. But, again, thanks for joining us. Good stuff. Appreciate it. Best of luck to you.
You've been great. Thank you.
Stay safe.
Anytime. Give me a call. You guys have – I'm going to play golf on the course right next to that.
Good. God bless you.
Yeah, I hope you guys have a ball. Great.
Have a great day.
All right. You guys have a great one, too. Thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye. Crash himself, and boy, he was stuck. So you want to now go back to the mailbag? We got a little bit of time. I'm looking up at the clock and see
let's finish it up. Go ahead.
So here's where we go. We go right back to Robbie Silverman, who didn't I wasn't able to finish what he was saying. So he just loved the Stanley Edwards show. He's a big Michigan fan, and he said that my line of questioning to Stan particularly was really hard hitting. He really enjoyed it. Now Brandon always gives us a title on our messages, which we almost never need to read. But I love this one today. Quote, backyard listening, arsenals, and dumbasses. That's pretty good. Here's Joe Cucci who wrote that. A couple of weeks ago, I mentioned my lovely wife missed listening to the ball games in the backyard on the radio on summer nights. We're excited to turn in the opening game. Turned on JR at 6:10. At 6:12, I heard the word arsenal. At 6:14, there it was again. Thanks, Denny. Denny, you want to explain that to some people who don't get it?
Denny doesn't use the word arsenal.
No,
Price does.
Yeah, Jimmy Price has been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah, he's okay. He's got about a 400 word vocabulary, and arsenal and a late movement come up a lot.
Buggy whip, yellow hammer.
There's a few sayings that are repeated a lot. But
Joe asked
the yak, the curveball,
the yacker. Yeah. So Joe wanted to add also that. He thinks if you watch baseball on television, that the fake background noise is much better than just dead silence. And he said, and think about this too.
I don't miss
the dumbasses behind the plate acting up to get the TV camera's attention.
Well, nobody misses that. Nobody misses that, but no. we miss the fans add color, context, color. You know what? That's true. They wear red and black and blue, and they add color instead of seeing a sea of green seats with no one in them. So the fans provide not just noise, but they're part of the scene, and it's just so blatant without them.
Good. Website submissions, that's asknofilter@gmail.com. You write us anytime you want to. John Remillet, or perhaps Remillet, of my hometown of Grosse Pointe, Michigan, says Mac versus Tommy John. Denny, 1967 sure wasn't the reason we lost in 67, because the incident happened in 68. Well, I was the one that brought up 67. So
August 68. Yep.
Yeah, so mea culpa on that one. Also, Mike, the police officer from Naperville, Michigan, says, you know, conceivably, this is for you, Denny, a team uses a reliever to start a game, then that reliever or the next reliever turns the game and the lead over to another reliever in the fifth inning who holds that lead, and he eventually gets the win. That reliever could theoretically win 30 games while only throwing one inning. Would Denny McClain recognize this reliever as a 30?
Oh, geez,
whatever they want to do is fine with me.
I guess Guardy's announced that Michael Fulmer is going to be an opener this year, which means he's not going to go more than innings in a game. So this means Michael Fulmer's record for 2020 will be zero victories. That's guaranteed.
Oh,
and of
that's
course
right.
He's going to lose games. So this guy could wind up like 0-5 or 0-6.
Yeah.
And people say, boy, he must have been terrible. That's not really fair.
Well, isn't it not fair, too, that a starter has got to go five innings, but a reliever can win a game with throwing one pitch?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. That was great.
Also,
love the mailbag.
I'm not quite done. We've got a few things left. Look at it. I wish you folks could see Eli's reactions. They're priceless. They really are. So anyway, Will Campbell writes, Bob the Bloviator, synonymous with Bob Bloviator, one who habitually bloviates, a pompous, opinionated, typically voluble commentator, a windbag. Thank you, Will.
And he says
you can also
He's proud of that.
Go ahead. Yeah. You can also call and leave us a message or text us. That number's 760-89-BALLS, all the way from Santa Cruz, California. Here's Larry Novak. Al Avila doesn't look so bad now, does he? Also just learned that Denny's the only Tigers pitcher to win the American League Cy Young Award two times. Is this true? It probably is, right, Denny?
It is. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Okay. Tied for Mike, but not, I'm not supposed to say that, but tied with Mike Cuellar just for the record in 1969.
Yeah, not in Detroit, he wasn't.
Okay.
No, he wasn't.
And I had it already. He had to beg to get it.
I guess another mea culpa on my part is due here, because Keith in Oak Park, Michigan, I presume, not Illinois, he says, I'm a newer listener here, but Bob, I want to correct you on something. I'm younger than you, but a hockey historian, and a lot of the old timers tell me that the Wings games were on TV back in the 50s and early 60s, but they would only show the third period from the Olympia on local TV. Not sure what they did for the road games, and Bud Lynch and Al Nagler did the games. And you know what? I have heard that, and I thank you for letting me
that. I don't remember that. I don't. You know?
Well, you weren't in Detroit. You were not in Detroit.
Yeah.
Dave Hoffman, when it comes to Lou Williams, let's not forget that he visited that gentleman's club because he loves their food, and also because of his compassion for those hardworking young women working their way through college. They've been out of work for a few months. All he wanted to do was help.
Redefined the word wings, haven't they?
Like I had the swimsuit issue come the other day, and I told my wife, I just want to read the articles.
Read the articles, of course.
That was a great mailbag.
Yeah, it was great. You thought it was great because it was fabulous. Shorter. I got more
fabulous.
Stuff as always.
We've been on an hour and a half, and that's our time limit. So we're going to talk to Brandstetter Monday? Is that what you said?
Yeah. You know, people have asked us about this since we started this show. Are you ever going to have Jim Brandstetter on?
And we all thought, well, I mean, we can't ask him about Michigan because he is Mr. Michigan. What's he going to tell us? And I thought the other day, you know, all we would do, because we've all known each other for 40, 50 years, whatever it's been, we're just going to tell stories on Monday and laugh our asses off about Bo, about you, about old man Ufer, about anybody you want
to
talk
and
about.
And ask Jim to tell the story about the first time he came to my house, because we did the Michigan games on replay, and he came to my house outside of town at 2 o'clock in the morning after he did a show in Bay City, and ask him what happened when he came to my house.
Yeah, I wish you guys would look at your monitors a little more. See what Brandon's holding up right now.
A new lawsuit has been filed. Bo Schembechler knew of Dr. Robert Anderson's abuse.
Yeah, that's just broke right now, I guess. Yeah. Brandon, did they say who filed that lawsuit?
Make any difference.
Well, everybody I'd like to jump. Know if it players
everybody, Bob, it's everybody not news, will jump
right,
on it.
Right. Of course, it's not news, right? Because we talked about that months ago when I talked to some former Michigan players. But Stanley Edwards essentially said the same thing the other day.
And this is
Bo knew everything.
Let Brandon talk.
Yeah, go ahead, sir.
The lawsuit's filed on behalf of 50 survivors by three different law firms. So it includes 23 football players from 68 to 86 and players in baseball, gymnastics, basketball, crew, track and field, and cross country. So it's a big one, and you know, this is what we were wondering, if they were going to link Bo Schembechler to it, and it looks like they are. And I'm to wonder. I mean, do we cancel Bo?
Well, that's the romance.
Oh my
that's
God!
The one thing you needed for the romance.
I can give you my Bo. Well, we've talked about.
You
it
know,
a lot. Let's.
I'm speaking as a Michigan State University graduate. Over my dead body, are they going to cancel Bo Schembechler? How much he meant to all of us. How much he went to the state.
A lot of people would have said the same thing about guys like. Who's
About Penn State? You don't think that was huge too?
Yeah, Joe Paterno. You know. Yeah. So
obviously, Joe. Look, Denny, you want to bring that up? We can go another half hour. To this day,
no, I don't want.
I do not believe that Joe Paterno actually knew what was going on.
Yes,
and
he did.
By an assistant coach that the assistant.
He didn't look into it. He could have found out. He wanted to find out.
I'm not going to argue with that. I'm not arguing with that. I'm just saying he didn't find out. That's all I'm saying.
He knew.
Remember the old Bo Jackson thing? What does Bo know?
Yeah,
Bo knew all of it, and that's affirmed. He controlled everything. When you control every aspect of the athletic department, and you hire a doctor who has been banned by the Michigan Health Service because of doing exactly what he continued to do for the football program, you knew about it. Period. But we'll talk about that more, and we'll ask whether Jim Brandstetter ever had any run-ins with Dr. Anderson, or not to be smug here or smarmy, but maybe he wasn't his type. We'll see, because I don't think he assaulted every
I knew that line
player.
Was coming for some reason. I felt it coming.
Now, this is a really serious issue here, boys.
Very serious.
You don't want to be smarmy or a smartass.
All right.
About it.
We'll talk to Jim on Monday, and you all have a great weekend, okay?
Thanks.
Have a good one, guys. Stay safe.